Hello and welcome to the College of Creation for another week of creating D&D Homebrew. My name is Dan.
And my name is Michael.
And we are Dungeons & Dragons DMs who love to create homebrew, all kinds of things, items, rules, creatures, features for D&D. This is a show where every week we take prompts from our community and try and make something, presenting each other with our creations and hopefully delighting and surprising each other in the process, and maybe, just maybe, giving you at home something that you can loop into your own games. And this week, Michael, would you like to remind our listeners what our prompt was this week?
We had a very exciting prompt this week. Something that I think both of us immediately were very interested in doing. We were tasked with making stat blocks for our favorite Pokemon, trying to extend Pokemon into the world of Dungeons & Dragons. Very interesting prompt, because I think maybe our favorite Pokemon, at least for me, my favorite Pokemon isn't necessarily the most interesting one to transfer into D&D as a monster. So maybe both of us veered away from that a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, I tried to make my favorite one work. I tried to make sort of my go-tos work a little bit, but just like always felt like I was mostly just reskinning something that already existed. Mm-hmm. But I gotta say I love this prompt, and it kind of just made me want to just like make a book of all the Pokemon, just stat it out. Which I'm sure somebody's already done.
I'm sure it exists somewhere
out there in the world.
Done much better than I could figure out, I'm sure.
And the other thing I thought about while making this was like, well, what are the mechanics? Because you kind of want a Pokemon to almost function like a familiar sort of, or like an animal companion or something like that.
Yeah.
Have you ever, because I certainly have, I have thought heavily about trying to make something like a Pokemon trainer work as a class or a subclass in D&D. Have you ever played around with that kind of thing?
Yes. I think the consensus around it ended up being, why don't we just play a Beastmaster Ranger? And I don't particularly like the Beastmaster subclass for the Ranger. I think it's very restrictive on the player. So we kind of went with like a Drake Warden Beastmaster hybrid with Pact of the Chain elements from the Warlock. It was a weird like Frankenstein monster thing that it didn't quite synergize 100%.
Definitely. I like the Drake Warden a lot. I do feel like it improves on basically every part of the Beastmaster, but it also is limited
to... It's exactly what the Beastmaster should have been.
But this is just a dragon. Like, you can't choose what kind of thing it is, right? Which is, I think, what's missing. And something that I've thought about in regard to this, have you played Octopath Traveler?
I have not, no.
So there are a number of classes in this game, and you can even do a little element of multi-classing. It's a really fun character mechanic. One of the sort of character classes is a monster hunter, basically. And one of the mechanics is you can capture monsters that you encounter out in the world, and then you can bring them out in battle to aid you, which, I mean, that character was my starting character in that game, and she was easily one of my favorites mechanically. It's a little bit, I think, of a hot take, but I really loved the mechanics of the Monster Hunter in that game. And so I've tried to make something like that, that is sort of like a hybrid of Pokemon and the Octopath and this whole idea of summoning as a core mechanic. But it's so fiddly. It's very hard to get right.
It's very dicey. It's hard to balance because the idea of Pokemon is so vast. Right, there are like 1,050 of them at this point, and they're all sort of different. Like, you know, if you get into typing and subtyping and really get into the nitty-gritty of what Pokemon is, there are many of them that are similar to each other. But on the whole, there are so many of them that are crazy different that it's hard to put that into D&D, where it is a little bit more streamlined with monster types and things that a lot of the base monsters are able to do. There isn't a crazy amount of variety. So you almost have to like create options for that subclass, right? You have to go in and make like 20 different base options that can kind of be customizable out from there to even start scratching the surface of what being a Pokemon trainer would feel like. One thing that I think is interesting is like mechanics of a Pokeball as a magic item, because there are so many different Pokeballs now. We started just with the four, and then each generation added a few more that are better at catching different types of things like that. That to me would be more interesting than making a subclass. Like, I would love to make an item set, like a Pokemon item set. Maybe I'll add that to our list.
That's good. I really like
that. We'll circle back around to Pokemon stuff in a couple weeks.
Because you can almost think of like a catching a Pokemon as almost similar to a banishment. But in this case, you are banishing it to an item.
Snap them
then you
to the
hold,
pocket dimension inside of your Pokeball.
And then you can use it to summon that thing at a later time. That's a cool item. That's just really rad.
Yeah. One of the things I was thinking about, I almost made it for today, and it was just, I think, a little bit above where my brain was able to go for the amount of time I had left. But the idea of just like temperament in general of Pokemon, like you go and you travel with them and train with them, and the more you use them in battle or care for them, they become kinder to you, right? Your bond increases with them. Because I suppose I'd have to imagine if I were a wild animal and somebody shot me into a pocket dimension that they carried on their belt, I would not be happy about that.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to do some work to earn my trust back. Like, what does that look mechanically transferred to D&D? Some type of bond mechanic that the more you use that, or the more you summon that creature, the more they come to trust you and the stronger they get.
Yeah.
That is much cooler and more interesting to me than just making a bunch of monster options.
Well, and this is really getting into the weeds of what I will say was, I think, the biggest struggle going into this is that you start to want to think outside into all of these existing mechanics, right? Throughout the whole world of Pokemon, all of the games. And that's when you start to get to the point where you're like, this doesn't really work in D&D and needs its own TTRPG, right? Which I'm sure exists. Yeah. I didn't actually do any looking, but I guarantee you there is Pokemon TTRPG.
Right. Whether it's published or just like out of the basement into the hands of just your circle of friends. I mean, at that point, it's like, why aren't I just playing a Pokemon game? this is a lot of work to shoehorn this into Dungeons and Dragons.
So like,
maybe not, you know, not without value, but it's a lot of work.
So this kind of thing exists, and it really does need to, if you're going to properly replicate the experience of Pokemon, because you know, evolutions don't really fit into the way that monsters work in D&D. However, I did try and play with that a little bit with my creation. Similarly, that like bond mechanic with like a trained, you know, companion animal isn't really a thing that has a robust rule set in the game outside of a couple subclasses, which I think if other mechanics were to be added to the game to allow that to be available to everyone, it would really basically nullify those subclasses that have those mechanics. Right. Or any sense
no
of familiars or anything
the
like
shepherd.
That.
No, yeah.
Right. So really it does get tricky, to not just make a whole new game, which, you know, is fine. If that's your vibe, if you're like, you know, listening to this and you're like, oh, I love the idea of taking this or any other world and you're trying to replicate it in D&D and it's just too much, hey, consider writing an indie game. It will take a lot more work, but there are a lot of good resources out there to give you some tips and tricks on how to make your own system.
If you listen to this and you end up writing your own Pokemon TTRPG, please let us know and let us play it with you.
Yes, we'll play it with you.
We'll sit at your table and play test your Pokemon game with you.
Michael, what is your go-to Pokemon game? What is like top tier for you?
Well, okay. So I have always collected the cards, much less in my recent years, but hardcore card collector when I was younger. I have many, many binders of them somewhere up in my closet. So initially, my preferred Pokemon game was just showing cards to my friends at recess. That was the big thing. I wasn't initially into the actual games. I never played the actual TCG when I was younger. I just loved collecting the cards and like having that be the community element of it. More recently, I guess more recently as in like 15 years ago up until now, I've been much more into the games themselves. And gosh, I love Ruby and Sapphire. I'm a Ruby and Sapphire boy. I love Generation 3. I said in the last episode, I think it is the best generation. Maybe not the most successful. Not the most nostalgia-driven, certainly. We can't compete with Charizard and Pikachu in Generation 3. But boy, do I love it. And it is the generation that I thought to pull some Pokemon for today. One of my favorite Pokemon, Swampert. Love that guy.
Okay.
I thought about making him today or for today, and I ended up going a different direction. But boy, shout out to all my water type Pokemon trainer people.
Big true. I'll
always
big true.
Pick the waters. Yeah.
I almost those. Always pick the water type types. As well. Great stuff. Yeah. I think for me, you know, Red and Blue are always going to be my go-tos. Yeah. I played those games on repeat, I swear.
Yeah.
And I just remember, like, the Safari Zone is a whole super fun thing. Like, all of the unique Pokemon that are only in there. I should have made Kangaskhan today. I didn't, but that's one of my faves that I could never catch because like everything in the Safari Zone always felt like it was like too difficult and you can't actually use Pokemon. So like, how are you supposed to catch these things? They don't want to be caught and I can't hit them.
Right.
It's not allowed. Yeah.
Man. So you are 2 years older than I am, or a year and a half or something like that.
Something like that.
It's interesting to think back then, like how much a year would change that, like the whole IP, how much can happen in a year and a half or 2 years.
Oh yeah.
Like I feel like I came into it just after Generation 1. Like I had all the Generation 1 cards, but I feel like I missed the boat on that initial like boom of Pokemon. So I really started with Gen 2, like the games speaking. I started with those games instead. So I feel like I always have a disconnect with Generation 1 that most other people in our era, like the elder millennial area of people, it's just something that I never see eye to eye on with. And that's a weird place to be. Generation
so
2
you,
is a weird place to start.
So you didn't catch any of like the Pokemon Yellow, like the Pikachu I choose you vibes, huh?
No.
That's wild.
It felt like it was 3 minutes before I entered the chat.
I remember the hype around yellow especially so much because like there's a fourth starter option and it's the cutest goddamn thing you've ever seen.
For me that was crystal, because there was gold and silver were my first two games, and then my big thing was like, oh my gosh, they're expanding this whole story. They're doing this whole thing with the third legendary. What? Oh my gosh. Crystal, that was my hype. That was the first big like hyped game for me. Yeah.
That's great. That's one of the great things I think about Pokemon, like we're talking about right now. You know, your generation is a totally different generation from mine when it comes to what generation you go to in terms of Pokemon. What's your favorite? What's your big in? And there is that interesting thing of like there are stages, there are groups. It's all cool though. Like you don't have to deny that somebody else is you know, a fan of a different generation or whatever.
Pokemon is one of those things that it's so vast, and they come out with things so often that anybody that wants to be into Pokemon has a slightly different first, right? Just 2 years apart from each other, we have totally different first experiences. And there are so many options that anybody can have their own very specific favorite thing.
Absolutely.
Within that universe and have it still be valid. And that's great.
Well, and it almost like there's a degree of that almost mirroring the game world in that, like the NPCs and trainers and stuff that you meet out in the world have also specialized into things that like you're like, that's crazy. Why do you only have bug and poison types? Like that's
right. Why do you only have bonkers six to me. Caterpies? What are you doing, dude?
But it's like, okay, no, but I get it though, because now we also experience that in the real world, because people just like go to a generation and they're like, I like this. True. I like these Pokemon because they're cute, or they're a type that I think is cool. Or they're a typing combo that's like, or I only have all of the starters or whatever. Like, it's, you know, you can play it however you want, and it's all valid and it's all cool because it's gotten, so vast and so huge that like, there's no wrong answer.
A little bit of something for everybody. Yeah.
No wrong answer at all.
Did you have a rule going into this week?
Ooh, did I have a rule going into this week? Well, why don't I tell you about mine and I'll go into it. How's that?
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's launch right in. We've talked about Pokemon enough.
We could probably talk about it
some more. Yeah.
But I will say I did have sort of a de facto rule that I came up with partway through. I didn't go in with a rule. Okay. I was like, I just want to find out what's my favorite Pokemon going to be, or what's a Pokemon that I think is going to be interesting to build. And then I'll just go from there, and I'll try and figure it out. I ended up coming up with a rule, though, when I started looking at some other stat blocks of D&D stuff, that this trait that has been introduced in more recent D&D, I think it came out with Fizbin's, but I could be wrong about that, is the mythic monster trait.
Oh, yeah.
Monsters have been introduced that have this mythic trait. The mythic trait is really like it's boss monster mechanics, right? The thing says when something happens, usually when it's reduced to zero hit points, that instead of falling unconscious, instead it regains a bunch of hit points and then it gets new features, usually a couple new actions, maybe a new resistance or something like that. And that to me was like, this is something that I can see as like a one-to-one for a Pokemon evolution, right? Instead of like you turn from this earlier version of the monster to now you're a different thing. You still have some of the same traits, features, some of the same vibes that you had before, but you now have access to new things. So it's like, I want to make a creature with a mythic trait. That was the rule. My first thought, because a Pokemon that I always try to have, regardless of generation that I'm playing, whatever, is I want to find me a Magikarp. And I want to evolve that into a Gyarados as fast as I can. I love Gyarados so much. He's a little weak against Lightning. That's fine. But when I'm trying to figure it out, I'm like, gosh, Magikarp is just such an awful thing to try and build. Because it can't do anything. And also, like, then the mythic trait triggering at dropping to zero hit points is just like, well, that also feels really lame because he's only going to have like one HP to begin with.
Right.
So
yeah.
it doesn't properly replicate the experience of just starting Magikarp in your party and immediately swapping him out the first thing in battle.
Yeah.
Like, you have to struggle to get a Gyarados. You have to fight and want it so bad. And I just couldn't figure out how to make that happen. So I just decided to go back to an earlier idea that I had that was like, let me just make a bunch of stuff. Let me make a fun mechanic and then variations, because I am who I am. So I give you the mythic Eevee forms. Unsurprising, it's Eevee, everybody's favorite. My wife is a big fan of Eevee, loves Eevee, would have a party full of Eevees if you were allowed to have 8 Pokemon in your party. But so Eevee is a simple beast as it stands. It's not particularly strong. It is very quick. And has a couple other things about it that have been expanded on in later generations. You know, its access to fairy type moves and charming and stuff like that has been added. But then, of course, the big thing that everybody focuses on is all of the Eeveelutions and how fun and cool that is. And you're right. So I give you all of the Eevee mythic forms. Let's start from the top here. So Eevee is a small beast, unaligned. Simple. Armor class, 13. Hit points. I went with 2d6. Doesn't really matter. I also didn't put challenge rating on all of these because I didn't want to do the math. And also, we've talked about it before. It kind of doesn't matter. Speed of 30 feet. And then its stat breakdown is a strength of 7, a dexterity of 17, constitution 10, intelligence 6, wisdom 13, charisma 15. For skills, we have proficiency in initiative and perception.
Interesting. Nice.
Initiative is not usually a thing you see added to skills in monster stat blocks, but it is a skill, just like any other skill. It is a it's a dexterity based skill check. So why shouldn't it be allowed to have proficiency?
Right.
And Eevee, famously quick attack, great stuff. And finally, it's got no dark vision or anything else crazy like that. Just no major senses there. We've got some key features. The first one is the one that only takes place when this is Eevee alone. This is too cute. Any creature who targets Eevee with an attack or harmful spell must first make a DC 13 wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, the creature must choose a new target or lose the attack or spell. It just boosts its defense a little bit, you know, tries to keep itself away from getting harmed. Now, then we get into the mythic trait. This is called Eeveelution. This recharges after a short or long rest. Although, honestly, probably just like once it's done, it's done. When Eevee is reduced to 0 hit points as a result of taking acid, cold, fire, lightning, necrotic, poison, psychic, or radiant damage, it doesn't die or fall unconscious. Instead, it takes a new form with full hit points based on the type of damage taken. And then we've got a little chart thing. What type everything is. If you take acid damage, that's you turn into Vaporeon. Cool. If you take cold damage, you turn into Glaceon. Fire damage, Flareon. Lightning damage, Jolteon. Necrotic damage, Umbreon. Poison damage, Leafeon. Psychic damage, Espeon. And radiant damage, Sylveon. And then for actions, it just has a simple claw attack and then has the escape attack pulled directly from the hair monster stat block. Can take the dash, disengage, or hide actions as a bonus action on each of its turns. It's just a little quick guy that can run around, try and avoid damage, but when Eevee takes damage from any kind of elemental magic damage, it turns into something else. And these mythic forms all have generally the same vibes. They are all medium beasts slash elementals, so anything that affects a beast or an elemental will affect them. They have hit an armor class around between 14 and 16 for the most part, depending on type. Hit points around 33 to 45, depending on constitution. And then Vaporeon's got a swimming speed, but most of them are just regular speed. Jolteon is particularly quick, so is a little bit faster. They also each have damage immunities to whatever damage type triggered their transformation.
That makes sense.
With the exception of Jolteon being immune to both lightning and thunder damage.
Also makes sense.
And then they all also have a regular claw attack as well as an elemental blast. And I'm just going to go through the elemental blast because that's the biggest thing that's slightly different with each different version. So they all have immunity to a type of damage, and when they take that type of damage, they instead regain hit points. And their elemental blast is basically all of them. It's a ranged weapon attack that deals 3d6 plus their modifier damage of the same type that they are immune to. But they all have additional features. So Vaporeon's elemental blast does 3d6 plus 4 acid damage, and the target is coated in acid. A creature coated in acid takes 2d4 acid damage at the end of each of its turns until it uses its action to scrape or wash the acid off. Glaceon's elemental blast deals cold damage, and the target's speed is halved until Glaceon's next turn. Flareon's elemental blast deals fire damage, and the target must make a DC 14 constitution saving throw or drop any metal weapon or shield it is currently holding and be unable to pick them up again until the end of Flareon's next turn. So it's like a half heat metal, doesn't actually do any bonus damage, but does disarm you. The Jolteon elemental blast deals lightning damage, and the target must make a DC 13 constitution saving throw or become stunned. Umbreon's elemental blast deals necrotic damage, and the target cannot regain hit points until the end of Umbreon's next turn. Leafeon's elemental blast deals slashing damage and poison damage.
Okay. Razor Leaf?
Yeah, exactly. And additionally, the target must make a DC 14 dexterity saving throw or become restrained by tangled vines for 1 minute. I only really like added a little bonus damage and stuff because poison is probably the most common resistance in the game. Yeah. As well as slashing, and it's a pretty low restrained escape DC. So, in general, Leafeon is a little less strong in a number of ways. So, giving it a little bit of a boost in some other areas, just gives it the opportunity to match up with the rest of them. Espeon's elemental blast deals psychic damage, and the target must make a DC 14 intelligence saving throw or become under the effects of the confusion spell for 1 minute. And Sylveon's elemental blast deals radiant damage, and the target becomes illuminated until the end of Sylveon's turn, and an illuminated target has disadvantage on stealth checks and cannot become invisible for the duration.
These are fantastic.
Very simple.
They're much like many other things that you have made. The beauty is in the simplicity. I wish I could just be as concise as you. as you. An envy of mine through and through. I love these so much. These are
great. I'm glad. For me, this felt like a little bit of a softball, and I don't feel like I was as ambitious as I was hoping it to be when all was said and done.
We can save our ambition for our full book of Pokemon stat blocks.
Yeah, I guess
we'll, we'll work together on a book of 1,000 stat blocks.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, where it's like I think for me especially, and this is just something I can speak to in this moment, is that oftentimes when I want to be really ambitious, I end up making something that is way too complicated and then confuses me in the end.
It's easy to get there.
That's a thing that I run into so often, is that I have a strong idea and I want to be so ambitious. And then when it actually comes to the creation of it, my ideas just like don't coalesce properly. And this week I just didn't have time to pare it back down to anything that I thought was really useful. So I decided to just go like, this is a good one. This is a good setup. It's a fun feature that I think I can see being fun both if you had a homebrew table that allowed you to take on an Eevee as a familiar, that could be a really interesting and fun or even a Beastmaster sort of Eevee, mm-hmm. right? That and then it could reset at a short rest or a long rest, right? And so, like,
right.
you know, if you're Beastmaster or Ranger and you've got this thing that can, you know, turn into a different kind of monster depending on the situation, that's fun. That's kind of a neat idea.
Yeah, and it's
if
like
if you have that table,
it's not the like we were talking the other day. We wrote a subclass together. If you want to see it, check us out on Patreon. But one of the things that we were talking about while we were doing that was how possible it is to create something that exists elsewhere and apply it to D&D. Like, what are the things that you're willing to eliminate from that thing that exists and add on to as far as D&D mechanics? And I think you did that really well here, where it's not a one-to-one comparison to Pokemon. Obviously, your Eevee only has 7 hit points average, so this transformation could occur very quickly, where it wouldn't in a Pokemon game. Like, you'd have to wait quite a while, or if you want to kind of jump on it with one of the elemental stones and forfeit some other moves that the evolutions can't get, but Eevee can. There are a lot of kind of finer details in there that are missed this way, but there are a lot of things that are gained, namely the versatility to explore all of the evolutions, potentially, depending on who you're going up against, and not have that be your final choice, which I think sometimes is the thing that people don't like about Eevee, because you have to find eight Eevees to get all of these things, because it is a finite choice once it evolves. So this is a really good adaptation, I think. It gives you a taste of everything. All of them have really unique features with their elemental blasts. It's not just this is a ranged weapon attack that hits for fire damage. Just spam that every time. Secondary effects are very cool and very appropriate for each stat block. And this is awesome.
Thank you.
Good use of mythic actions too. That criminally underused. It was introduced as a thing, and then so few monsters actually utilize it.
Yeah.
I
love it as a mechanic. Fantastic. I think it's very fun. And yeah, the idea specifically with this, because, you know, I don't think I mentioned this anywhere in the copy, but there is an intention going into this that this is more intended to be a familiar or a companion than it is to be a monster you encounter in the wild. Mm-hmm. That's not really what it's for. So it could be really fun to play with in that way. And I think it would be less satisfying encountering it as a monster encounter than if you were to loop this into Beastmaster or Pact of the Chain, mm-hmm. or, you know, a number of those other things, even possibly Wild Shape. I don't really know how that would work, but interesting. It's something.
That's what we have to do. That's the next subclass we have to write together is the Pokemon Wild Shaping Druid. That's what we want.
Yes.
No, this is great, man. I like this quite a bit.
Thanks. I did have a good time making it, and I also really like my formatting. I spent a good amount of time on formatting.
this is fantastic. If you are just listening to this and you're not following along with the free PDF of these that you can find on Patreon, it's modeled after a Pokédex, which is fantastic. Yeah.
Did you go with favorite Pokemon, or did you go with something that's interesting to create?
Yes and no. So, as we talked about, I'm a big fan of Mudkip and Swampert. Marshtomp is, you know, whatever. We all skip through the middle stages. Please, if you would open your document, this was my favorite Pokemon when I started. Interesting that you talked about this earlier. I know that your hang up was the evolution, and I did not consider evolution at all. That was
fine.
Not a part of why I made any of these in any shape or form. So I did go with Magikarp and Gyarados. Absolutely my favorite Pokemon. Is a must-have in any Pokemon game that I play, including, you know, the fringe games like Pokemon Stadium and Pokemon Go and things like that.
Yeah.
Need a Gyarados.
This is truly just like confirming even more that we are maybe the same person.
We're mentally in line at all points.
Have the same freaking brain.
We come to our final product from opposite directions, but we get to the same place. Okay. So this is what I have, because you're absolutely right. The mythic evolution would not work for Magikarp because it's incredibly weak. It is a struggle. It's a battle to get that Gyarados. But boy, the spoils are sweet once you get there. Once you get it, it is exactly what you wanted. So we'll start with my Magikarp stat block. It's a small beast, unaligned, an armor class of 12, 12 hit points, which may be a bit high.
That's a ton of hit points.
I figured
that's more than a commoner.
Yeah, I figured I gave Gyarados so many that I was just trying to scale back.
That's very fair.
Speed of 5 feet, swim speed of 30 feet, and really the big thing with Magikarp, the big thing with all five of these, I made five stat blocks today. I really tried to adapt Pokemon language into D&D language and mechanics specifically for abilities and moves. So I focused less on the Pokemon themselves and tried to pick them for moves that I thought would be fun to adapt. So I didn't have as concise of a concept as you. But Magikarp has the Swift Swim ability in the Pokemon games, and that just means that it's faster when it's raining. So I said Magikarp's swim speed increases by 10 feet anytime it is outdoors and caught in rainy weather.
Cool.
Two actions, splash, nothing happens. And then tackle, it's a melee weapon dealing 3 damage. It can use that 8 times a day. So once it hits that, it can only splash and do nothing.
Cool.
Moving on to Gyarados. I gave it the typing it has been asking for decades. It is a huge dragon, not a beast.
Yes.
It is a dragon, typically chaotic.
It's
neutral.
A dragon.
It has so many dragon-type moves, but it's water flying.
Yeah.
What? Why? Dragons can also fly. Come on. Come on.
It should be water dragon.
Water dragon. Absolutely. Absolutely.
The flying part, yeah, I've never really understood.
I think it was just a way to move their coolest Pokemon from just being able to swim to being applicable anywhere. You have a Gyarados, you can just fly through the sky. Dragons can also do that. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Admittedly, I overloaded this stat block.
Yeah, this is thick.
It's thick. It's a wide, big stat block. My idea for this was that with the move swapping mechanic that's in the Pokemon games, you would just pick 4 of these total.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
So I gave all the options, and you can pick 4 of them and use those in whichever combination you would like, because not every Gyarados is same. Not every Pokemon is the same,
yeah.
You know? So I was thinking...
That's a really interesting thing to bring in, because, yeah you're absolutely right that, like, there's no set
moveset
for any one Pokemon. There are options. There are all kinds of ways to customize and things like that, and that's hard to replicate here. So I think that's a fun and interesting choice.
I was thinking that if there was a book of Pokemon stat blocks, this is how they would be laid out, with the caveat that only a certain number of these abilities can be used at a certain time, like in a certain, maybe even choose them before a combat, you know, or like if you have this,
yeah,
this is probably a bit strong to have as a companion, but, you know, as a DM using this as a monster, you can kind of pick and choose. So huge dragon, typically chaotic neutral, AC of 17, hit points. I set it at 110, but it's kind of a wide range there. I gave it a flying speed of 40 feet and a swimming speed of 80 feet. Boosts to strength and con. Everything else is kind of middle of the road. Okay, dex and wisdom. It is vulnerable to lightning damage, as you said before. Yep. So I did include that. It's resistant to acid and cold. It is immune to the frightened and petrified conditions. And it can communicate with all beasts and all dragons that have a swim speed. So it can still kind of like communicate naturally with other creatures. To its abilities, it has the Intimidate and Moxie abilities in the Pokemon games. My thought is you could pick one or the other of these. Intimidate, if another creature moves within 15 feet of Gyarados, they must succeed on a DC 14 con save or become frightened. That's for 1 minute. While frightened in this way, the creature's strength score is reduced by 2, as Intimidate does reduce the attack output of the opposing Pokemon in a Pokemon battle.
Nice.
If the creature succeeds on the saving throw, they are immune to this condition for 24 hours.
Great.
Moxie, if Gyarados reduces another creature to 0 hit points, it makes all attacks at advantage on its next turn, which is kind of a one-to-one. This is the only one that's like almost exactly how it operates in Pokemon. If Gyarados KOs an opponent, its attack is elevated towards the opponent that swaps in on the other side. So that felt fitting. I also gave it a Surf ability. I almost made this an attack, but it seemed more interesting on the overworld side of things. Gyarados can carry up to 2 large creatures, 4 medium, 6 small, or 8 tiny creatures on its back without incurring any penalty to its movement speed. So it can be used as
the fairy. I think that's great to use as not an attack, but instead an ability that's almost like a... almost like a powerful build sort of ability, for swimming.
Yeah, exactly. It also has a multi-attack. It can use Aqua Tail, which is just a tail attack, and Crunch, which is just a bite attack. One Crunch and one Aqua Tail per turn. I also included a Hydro Pump that recharges on a 5 or a 6. Gyarados exhales pressurized water in a 60-foot line that's 5 feet wide. Each creature in that line must make a DC 14 dex save, taking 33 force damage on a failed save or half as much on a successful one. I had a hard time deciding between cold and force. I grapple with this mentally, that all water-based creatures in D&D deal cold damage. I think that is not realistic. Not all water is cold. It should be force damage.
Yeah.
I wish there was just like a water-based damage type. I also gave it a rain dance action. Gyarados calls to the skies and causes heavy rain to begin falling, which directly affects the next action, which is water pulse. Gyarados expels a powerful wave 20 feet in each direction, centered on its location. Any creature caught in the wave must make a DC 14 strength save or be knocked prone. This saving throw is made at disadvantage if it's raining. So a little combo piece there. And I also gave Gyarados one legendary action that it can use, Dragon Breath. Because it's a dragon, Gyarados exhales a 30-foot cone of acidic smog. Each creature in the area must make a con save or take some damage. That's all it is.
It's acid and cold damage.
Acid and cold damage.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
So
I love
Magikarp
Gyarados
and Gyarados
so much.
Yeah.
I really like the idea of like, even building a table into the stat block somewhere to be like, hey, roll 4 times on this table, and those are the moves that this particular Gyarados has access to.
That's a good idea. Oh. I should include that.
I mean, it would take up a lot of space, and if you did that for a bunch of Pokemon, that would be very complicated.
I think for
something this big that has access to a lot of moves, especially a lot of powerful moves, I think that's the kind of thing that seems really interesting.
Give it a little bit more randomization.
Like, you pick one of the traits and 4 of the actions or something like that. I don't know. You know what I did for the Mythic action when I made my first draft of the Magikarp into the Gyarados was instead of the Mythic action triggering on a dropping to zero hit points, I instead had it be a roll. So at the start of each of its turns, Magikarp rolls a d20, and on a result of 1 plus the number of combat rounds elapsed or less, it turns into Gyarados.
That is very interesting. I like that a lot. I could see where that would be difficult to put into digestible words.
Yeah. it was a little tricky. So yeah. And it also does that thing that I don't generally like, which is like keep track of how many rounds have elapsed.
Right.
Which is like if this is any sort of large combat, that's hard.
Yeah.
But again, like, does it work best as a creature you encounter then, or does it work best as a companion? I don't know. That's what I ran into so much issue with, was like, I want this to be both somehow, but I can't figure out how to make it both. Anyway, but
it's tough. It's tough.
I like this build a lot.
Thanks.
I like a lot of the ideas there of that, like, rotating move set is really cool and not really a thing that exists, but I think could be really fun to just add some, like, variety to the monsters that are encountered, you know?
It's a way to throw a bunch of the same monsters into a combat and still keep players guessing at least a little bit. Like, they can have an overall idea of what the monster can do, but they don't know which things they can do when.
Well, it's even the kind of thing that you could add to a generative, like, even if you added that sort of mechanic to, like, a group of town guards, you would vary it up. So, like, it's not that they all have spears and that's all. Like, hey, this one has a dagger and a crossbow, and this one has a longsword, and this one has a shield.
Yep.
But that means that they all have, like, slightly different ways to attack. They have slightly different mechanics. It gets a little complicated, perhaps, but it also means that you're creating a lot of variety and you're making your combat feel a lot more, unique.
Yeah.
So.
I
like
it
as a mechanic.
The town guards are Gyaradoses. can you imagine an aquatic city just guarded by a bunch of giant dragons?
Oh my God.
We're never going in there. I don't care what type of shops are there. That's fine. Pass. We'll go to the next place.
Love it.
I did make 3 more stat blocks that are not connected in any way.
Cool.
Other than the fact that I thought their abilities were interesting.
Okay.
These are 3 Pokemon that, well, I guess one of them does evolve, but in their first appearances, there are 3 standalone Pokemon that really are not connected to any other Pokemon, and maybe overlooked because of that fact, but they do have some cool features. The first of which is Smeargle, the dog person Pokemon with a paintbrush tail.
I don't think I know Smeargle. What is
from Generation 2.
Oh.
He's a little painter guy that is often forgotten about. He is a small humanoid, typically neutral good. Middling stats, nothing crazy. His highest stat is Wisdom with a +3. His skills are Arcana and Performance, and he is immune to the Charmed condition.
Great.
The cool thing about Smeargle in the Pokemon games, at least the later games, it wasn't always this way, but they changed it to be a little bit more versatile. His move that it can use is called Sketch, and it basically just copies a move that the opposing Pokemon can use. So really, Smeargle can use any move in the game if it's up against the right Pokemon, right?
Cool.
So Smeargle has 2 abilities. Again, this can be chosen between the two. Own Tempo, Smeargle's ability scores cannot be reduced in any way. Technician If Smeargle uses its sketch ability to copy an attack from another creature, it can choose to use that creature's stats if its own are lower, which in most of the time is probably true.
Yeah.
Does not have any actions. It can only take reactions. And it can only take one reaction. It is called Sketch. If Smeargle sees another creature using an action, Smeargle can remember it and use that action on its next turn. So it eventually develops actions, but only based on what it is up against.
Gotcha. So it keeps those actions.
Actually, I'll ask your opinion on this, because I was going back and forth to see if the action only took for one round. Because that kind of like makes sense with how it's used in the game. It kind of just takes the action and is able to use it, and then it can take a different one. Which, if it's in a big combat and there's a lot of variety, that could be fine. But if it's like a 1v1, or, you know, if it's any type of smaller situation, holding it for a while would make more sense.
Yeah.
So like, it can ditto that action.
Yeah.
And keep it for an hour or something like that before it loses the muscle memory or something.
Yeah. I think it's cool for it to like build out a set of actions that it can take based on what it's seeing, and then it can just kind of like customize itself for the combat. That's kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah.
The reactionary, like it can only use it right away, does feel like it would have limited use. Like it would be cool the first couple of times, but then you would like, as soon as a player caught onto it or something like that, like it would change the combat heavily, I think. But I think that's a very interesting thing. I don't know.
I wonder, maybe going off of the Pokemon moveset kind of organization. Maybe it does keep them, but it can only retain up to three.
Yeah, sure.
So it could only have Sketch and three other actions. Yeah. And if it wants to use Sketch again, then it has to replace one that it...
That's a good idea. I think that's good. I think that's
really
smart.
Maybe I'll do that. Yeah. Maybe I'll rewrite it to be like that.
Yeah. That's a fun ability and a Pokemon that I'm not super familiar with.
Well, great.
There you go.
Just justice for Smeargle.
All right.
Often forgot about.
Who else we got here?
We also, my second stat block is for Chansey, the classic.
Okay.
It's medium fey, lawful good.
Great.
Pretty low armor class of 12. Hit points, 229.
That's so many.
Because if you look at Chansey's stats in the game, it is wild. Because it's all based off of... You know, it's like a number scale. Her base stat for every other thing is HP, attack, defense, special attack, special defense, and speed. Those are the six standard Pokemon statistics. Everything is in the red zone, which is low, except for hit points, which is when the bar is way off the chart. Has a hit point stat of 250, which... This doesn't need to make sense to any of you. Just comparatively, everything else is below 100. Like 50 is the next one. So it has so much HP compared to of everything else that it can do that I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
So it is bad at everything except for having hit points and healing. Which becomes apparent later on in the stat block.
Cool.
So I put its constitution at 27.
Yeah.
+8 Huge. Constitution. Everything else is, I guess, wisdom is pretty high for the sake of healing, and a medicine proficiency, but everything else is +2 or lower. Chansey again has two ability choices: healer. Whenever Chansey restores hit points to itself or a friendly creature, all dice rolled are maximized.
Great.
Or natural cure. Conditions, including all levels of exhaustion, only affect Chansey for 1 hour. Chansey is not immune or resistant to any conditions whatsoever, but they only affect it for a limited amount.
Limited, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All
right. We have a couple actions, a standard body slam, melee attack.
Easy.
We have Heal Bell. Chansey removes one condition from itself or another creature instantaneously. Rest, which is only two per day. Chansey puts itself to sleep, gaining the unconscious condition for 1d4 rounds. All of its hit points are restored at the time this action is taken. So you can get Chansey all the way down close to zero, and it can just go to sleep.
Great.
And restore all of it.
Rest. Come back.
Yeah.
Great.
And also, it has a sleep talk action. All creatures who are within 5 feet of Chansey and are not deafened must make a DC 12 con save, taking 2d6 thunder damage on a failure or half as much on a success. Chansey must be unconscious to use this action.
Love it.
Gives a little bit of versatility if you do roll a 4 on the rest.
Yeah.
And you're out of commission for that long. You can't move, but at least you can protect yourself a little bit.
Yeah. That's cool.
And the last one, the unsung hero of Pokemon Go players everywhere, Shuckle. It's a small beast. It's unaligned. An armor class of 21. Shuckle is like Chansey, where its defense and special defense are like 10 times the amount of all of its other stats. It just focuses on that and nothing else.
Wow.
It is immune to the petrified condition. Its one ability is called Contrary, which is an ability from the game. Whenever Shuckle is subjected to a condition, it can choose one of its ability scores and increase it by one. This increase lasts for 24 hours.
Great.
And it's only actions. It has a slam attack and defense curl, which can be used 3 times a day. Shuckle's armor class increases by one. This increase lasts for 24 hours.
Nice. Yeah.
So it can, you can kind of bide your time, like kind of like Metapod. You can just keep on hardening until it's impossible to hit it.
Yeah.
It can just defense curl 3 times, use all 3 of its uses right away, and sit there and not take any hits with an armor class of 24.
That's pretty good. That's pretty darn good. Those are fun abilities, and I think some of them really like play really well with D&D mechanics. I think rest is a super cool and interesting idea, and that 1d4 roll, like, I don't know, perfectly encapsulates the weird frustration of like being put to sleep in Pokemon or using a rest and like just not knowing how long the Pokemon is going to be asleep for. Just like, okay, well, I guess you might be asleep forever.
200 plus hit points. You can take a couple hits.
So many.
You can body some blows.
That's good.
While you're asleep.
I like that a lot. The sketch almost reminds me also of the metronome move in Pokemon, which also might be a fun and interesting one to find out how to replicate in D&D. My immediate thought is like,
metronome-esque.
Roll a d10, and that's the level of spell that you cast.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And 10 is the ninth level spell, and 1 or is a cantrip.
Cantrip,
And what else? Yeah. I mean, then you, like, I don't know, figure out what friggin' spell you randomly cast.
Yeah, roll on this D100 table of spells.
Yeah, right? Truly.
It would almost have to be that.
Yeah,
that,
I think it would have to be. You'd have to roll for what level, what class spell list, and then roll a D100. Like you need 3 nested tables for that ability to work. But I think it could be fun.
Quite a complex ability. For next week, Dan and I will both tackle the Pokemon ability metronome.
That's all we're doing.
Yeah. We're not rolling today. We're just doing that.
I always liked metronome, though, you know? I always thought it was a fun...
The unsure nature of it. The way that it could completely destroy your game or turn the tide in your favor.
Oh, yeah.
It's fantastic.
I mean, look, if you can get, like, your, I don't know, weird yeah, Chansey or something like that, or Wigglytuff to cast like Dream Eater.
Yeah. Yeah.
You could either get that or you could get them to cast Leer.
Right, yeah. Sick. I cast Sand Attack.
Dang it. I like all of these. They're fun.
Thanks.
And I think they would all, just the abilities themselves, would make for really interesting encounter versatility.
That's what I focused on. I appreciate that. That's the thing that was most interesting to me this week is, man, did I scour dozens of Pokemon lists just looking, just like not even really reading the text on the screen anymore. Just like, which one of these creatures am I going to do? There are so many to choose from. How am I going to delineate what is interesting enough to put on the page? And it came down to the weirder abilities, the things that
I think it's great
would be fun to adapt.
I think that's a really good tactic to take, is to just go for some interesting Pokemon abilities and find out how to port them over. That's cool. That's super rad.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, I like that a lot. That's very fun.
Had a good time doing it.
Yeah, good. Good, good, good. Well, what a fun time, Michael. Would you like to roll for what our creation is going to be next time?
I would love to. Let's get that table on up here.
Yes, indeed. I am pulling up our table of homebrew prompts. If you, listener, have some homebrew prompts that you would like to see us make, tackle, see if we can come up with a good or fun ideas for, you can send us an email at collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com, or you can jump on over to our Patreon. That is patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod, and send us a message there. You can also access all of the versions of the creations that we've made. You can see them. You can put your eyes on them in all of our beautiful formatting, download them, and use them in your games. Michael, what are we making next week?
Let's roll and see what we get. That is going to be a 16 today, Dan.
16. Okay, we have another subclass. We're back to subclasses.
Okay, after a couple weeks of monsters. Nice.
Indeed. This is from Bagel Lord on the Discord. This is a wild okay. magic or randomized rogue subclass that uses a deck of cards or some other tool for randomization.
Yeah, I remember having a conversation with them on the Discord about this a long time ago, and this is very interesting. Interesting, it's twofold why this is interesting, because we both sort of agree that the rogue is maybe not our least favorite class because artificers exist, but it is in the bottom two.
And yeah, it's low on my list.
For both of us to make a rogue that we enjoy.
Yeah, I'm really interested in the looseness of this mechanic. You know, it's wild magic or randomized in some way. Like there's some element of chaos here that uses a deck of cards or some other tool for randomization. You know, is that the character using a deck of cards? Is that the player using a deck of cards? Is this a gambit situation?
Yeah.
Or is this tarot?
Yeah.
Is this a deck
used?
Of cards?
Yeah.
Are you using the deck of like many things? Are you using the deck of illusions? There could be a lot of different options here to use various versions of cards to create some sort of random thing. And what element of the class are you going to randomize?
Right. Is it all random? Are just little parts of it random?
The
subclass the use of the cards
randomized,
random?
Or is it actions? It's hard to know.
Gosh, this is good. Yeah.
This will be
interesting.
I might have to revisit some old ideas because I have something that immediately springs to mind as maybe an adjacent idea that I had at one point that might be worth digging back up again and seeing if I can fit it into this particular prompt.
That's a good one.
This will be interesting. This will be interesting. Quite broad.
I think a lot of room for us to go in vastly different directions here, which is great.
Until then, this has been the College of Creation. Michael, what do you have to say to the people before we go?
Dan, today I'd like to speak to anyone who has, at any point in their life, enjoyed some type of subculture, niche, fad. For me, when I was younger, it was Pokemon. I rushed home every day from school to catch Pokemon on TV, collect the cards, play the games, talk about it with my friends, understanding full well that some other people might not think that that was very cool. And my message to you, like whatever you like. If something brings you joy, it doesn't matter if anybody else thinks it's cool or not, as long as you think it's cool. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Michael. I couldn't agree more with that point. Like what you like. You'll find your people. You will.
Yeah. Sometimes you just make a podcast with them.
Almost every single time, Michael.
Yeah.
Before you know it, there's a whole community listening to your Neopets podcast, and you were never alone to begin with.
that's very true. That's all right. Very true.
Well, all of you, take care of yourselves, and we will be back here next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Hey, folks, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the College of Creation. If you want to see our creations from this episode and all of our past episode creations, you can find those for free on our Patreon page at patreon.com/collegeofcreationpod. And if you decide to become a patron, you will also automatically get access to any revised versions, plus our patron Discord and bonus episodes where Michael and me just talk about all kinds of things. You can send your homebrew prompts and questions to collegeofcreationpod@gmail.com. Our music is by Fuser Wolf. You can check out his tunes on Bandcamp and Spotify. Thank you so much again for listening, and we will see you right here again next week.